In the air, two lines down on the top of Ayin Amud Aleph, the Gemara continued to discuss the machloket that we saw yesterday between Rav Huna and Rabba, as to whether a Bechor is Nitkadesh Limafreya. Once the Rove leaves the womb of the mother, does that make it Kadosh Limafreya, as if anything that exited from the time it was being birthed was already Kadosh? Or is it Mikano Dahaba? Or is it only prospectively that we say that it is Kadosh? And now the Gemara asks from our Mishnah, Tanan, Hamivakeret, Hamikasha Leleid. If you have a female animal that is giving birth for the first time, is having difficulty with that birth, Michateich Ever Ever, Umashlich Leklavim. You can cut it up piece by piece and throw it out to the dogs. My love, what's the scenario here? Michateich Umeniach. Sounds like he's cutting up the pieces, piles them up in a pile, and then he throws them out to the dogs when he's finished taking out the Behema. V'amart l'mafreya hu kadosh. If you think that retroactively, once the robe leaves, it is kadosh, ikaver mi ba'ile. It should say that you bury it. Because as long as it is present and there, then retroactively the kedusha would have impact over here. Tosafot does ask, even according to the one who says mikano l'haba, is it really so simple that when it comes to mikano l'haba, only the pieces afterwards are kadosh, the pieces that came out before are not kadosh. So it says, Tema, Laman Damar Nami Mikano Labahu Kadosh, Amay Mashlik Leklavim. Because even when we have it cut up and the robe comes out, it's still called a Leda. So then why doesn't it become kadosh here to forward? Now again, if the animal's whole, the whole animal will be kadosh. Why are we here? Don't the pieces become kadosh? He says, V'yesh Lamar, since the kadosh doesn't evolve until the robe exits, Imke Mashin Nechta Kodem Yitziat Rov, Ein Kadosha Chalalav Kalal. There's no kadosh on it whatsoever. Even after you hit the threshold of the robe. And then whatever comes out after that point will require kvura. And that's, he says, the way that Rashi explains it. But again, you're going to have to differentiate that from the case where the whole animal comes out, and therefore the robe will be koveya on the entirety of the animal and make it kadosh mikana laba. Doesn't just mean the minority, then it means the whole animal. It's only here because it's in pieces. Then Mikano Laba only affects the pieces that come out afterwards, not the pieces that came out beforehand. So for the Mikano Laba, you could pile it all up, and then once you hit that rove, that part forward will be kadosh. Anything before that, you can throw to the dogs, even though it's piled up here. On the other hand, for the Mafreya, if the stuff is still here, meaning the parts of the animal are still here, then it's the Mafreya kadosh. And then why are you allowed to throw it to the dogs? At that point, you should have to bury it. It says, lo, hacha ma'iskinan mechateich umashlich. It's a case where you're cutting it up and throwing it to the dogs as you're cutting it up. So now that'll be differentiated from the case that we saw before, whereby you sell a third to the goy. Because when you sell a third to the goy and then the other third comes out to reach the point of rove, at that point everything is still extant. Since it is extant, it l'mafreya will be kadosh, and then that will wipe out the goy's ownership because you didn't own it to sell it to the goy, and therefore he doesn't own it. Over here, if you dispose of it as it's coming out, then it's not kadosh, and retroactively it can't be kadosh because it doesn't exist anymore at that point when you hit the rove. And therefore there's no kadusha retroactively. Ava, mechateich umeniach mai. Okay, so now you're telling us the case in the mission is a case where he's cutting it up and tossing it to the dogs as each piece comes out. That means that in a case where you cut it up and pile it up, what would be the din? Yikaver. You should bury it. Adatana Seifa, then why does the Mishnah, in making the distinction in the Seifa, say, Yatsa Rubo Yikaver, that if the majority of it exits, then you bury it? And as Rashi says over here, that Mashma Bavat Achat, is what we discussed in the Mishnah yesterday, that Rashi suggests, based on this conclusion here, that the Mishnah is speaking about a case where it comes out in one shot. We're not cutting up pieces anymore. Veniftara Mina Bechora. And the next animal that exits will be Patur Mina Bechora. Liflog v'litnei b'didei. Make a finer distinction within the Mishnah. Bamed v'ayim amurim. When is it true that you can throw it to the dogs? That's v'mechateich u'mashlich eiver eiver. That's when you're cutting it up and throwing it as each one comes out. You're throwing it to the dogs. That would be permitted. Aval mechateich u'meniach. If you cut it up and piled it up, yikaver. Then you should bury it because it then does attain kedusha because it's still extant at the time that the robe exited, and then everything becomes kadosh. Le'mafreya. Mar says, Achanami Kamar. That's exactly what the Mishnah means. The way to read the Mishnah is that when it says there you cut it up and you give it to the dogs, that means that you're cutting it up and giving it piece by piece to the dogs. If you cut it up and pile it up, it's as if the entire animal came out in one piece and you hit the point of robe whereby everything retroactively becomes kadosh. Similarly, by the case where you pile up the pieces, it also become retroactively kadosh. So in that way, Rav Huna can't fit into the Mishnah, even though it's a difficult way to read the Mishnah. Nevertheless, he can't fit into the Mishnah, even though he's saying that retroactively becomes kadosh. And from the Mishnah, it sounds like that's not the case. The distinction being that when you throw it out one by one, the mafreya has nowhere to devolve because you've already gotten rid of whatever it is. And so therefore, even there is kadosh the mafreya, it doesn't exist to become kadosh the mafreya. Whereas in cases where it does exist, it will become kadosh the mafreya. All right, now the Gemara continues and says, Boy, Robo. Robo asked the following question. Halchu beivarim achar harov? Alo halchu beivarim achar harov? Do we go after the robe when it comes to the eivarim, or we do not go after the robe when it comes to the eivarim? The truth is that back on Samachet Amud Bet, we discussed the machloket as to whether there's leidat eivarim or in leidat eivarim. And the Gemara says that the nafkamina is whether when you have a robe of neighbor exiting, does the miut get pulled all along with it? The question is whether the question of Rabbi here is only according to the one who says that ain leidat eivarim, because according to the one who says leidat eivarim, it's obvious that the miut goes after the robe. But for the one who says ain leidat eivarim, that's the question over here. Or does this question apply equally to them, and that is a separate issue from the issue that we're discussing over here, and that is the view of the Ramban that can fit into both opinions back there. Hechi domi. So what's the scenario here? Ilema kagon shiatza rov bimiyut eiver. The rove of the animal exited the womb now, but the rove was contributed by a minority of a single eiver. Bekami bayilei. And now we're asking the question, which side gets the pull? Hai miyut debrai. That minority that is outside of the animal, but a rove the eiver shadinalei. Do we then attach it to the robe of that particular limb that's still inside and say that it pulls it back in, and now you don't have a robe of the animal exiting? Oh, but taruba du ubar shadin alay. Or do we go after the robe of the ubar itself, and the robe of the ubar is now on the outside? So you have here, the robe of the ubar is already out. But the thing that brought it over the threshold was a minority of an eiver, a minority of a limb. So now that limb, do we count it towards the robe, because the robe of the animal is outside, and therefore we pull it towards the robe side? Or we pull it towards the robe of the limb itself, which is still inside, and then that would diminish the amount that exited, and it wouldn't be a robe that exited. The Gemara answers to that pshita, that is straightforward. We would not go after the robe Eiver in the face of the robe of the Ubar. Majority of the fetus will govern over here, not the majority of the Eiver, and therefore the miut will be looked as if it has exited already and contribute towards the robe. That's not a question. Ella, the question is like this, Kagon, Shiatza Chetzio Birov Eiver. It got to 50% with Rov Eiver, with the majority of a limb. Bekami Bayile. Now the question is, Hayu Miut to Gavai? That minority that's left internally, Mahu, the Mishte Batar Rov Eiver. Do we throw it after the robe of the Eiver, and that will throw you over the threshold of 50-50? You're at the 50-50 point. Contributing to that 50% that's on the outside is the majority of a limb. The minority of the limb on the inside, now if you pull it towards the majority of the limb, that'll pull you over the threshold to make it a robe on the outside. If you leave it the way it is in and what's out is out, then you'll only be at 50-50 and a robe will not have exited. So that's the nature of the question over here. Tashma, yatsa, rubo, hare zeikaver. That's our Mishnah. If the robe exits, then you bury it. My rubo. What is meant by the majority exiting? Ilemo rubo mamash. If you're telling me it means really the majority of the fetus has exited, ash hashta lo yashminan de rubo kekulo. That's a big fetish. That when a robe of an animal exits, or robe anything happens, we assume that it has the equivalence of being kekulo. That's a well-established principle. You don't need the Mishnah over here to teach you that. Elalav. So what's the fetish of the Mishnah when it tells you rubo that came out? Gonjiatza chetio berobever. It's our case over here. That's the case where 50% came out under the majority of a single limb, and now we're going to push that limb along with it. It's going to tell us that you get to the robe because the minority of the limb that's left on the inside is pulled by the robe that is on the outside. It says, lo, kagon sheyatzah rubo b'miyut eiver. It's a case where the majority exited b'miyut eiver with a minority of a limb, b'kamash malan. And it's coming to teach us, d'lo shavkinen rubo d'ubar d'behema vazlina batar eiver, that we don't give up the robe of the fetus in order to go after the robe of that particular limb. This is what the Gemara said before about Rava's question. If we formulated it this way, it would be pshita. We know for sure that the case is you'd follow the robe of the ubar and not the robe of the eiver. So the Gemara comes back and says, that thing that we said pshita before, that's exactly what the Mishnah is teaching you when you say yatzar rubo. Yatzar rubo comes to teach you that the robe of the fetus governs and not the robe of the limb. And therefore, the minority of the limb that is exited will count towards the robe of the fetus. And even though we said before that it was pshita, nevertheless, sometimes the Mishnah comes to teach you something that is pshita, if it doesn't take a lot of extra work or extra writing in order to do that. And then in the Mishnah, it says, yetzah rubo, we cover something that, yes, might be pshita, but it's additive in nature. And even though we would have known it possibly without that in the Mishnah, nevertheless, the Mishnah writes it in order to yagdil torah v'yadir, so that we have the information and it's clear that that is the case. Rashi over here makes a comment about inei maruba mamash. Gemara here is trying to discover what exactly is meant by the rubo in the latter half of the Mishnah. Because rubo makes it sound like it came out bebatakat. It came out in one shot. The apa gav the shaninu leel. Even though we gave an answer for Rav Huna just before, that it's a case of mechatechu meniach. It's a case not where the robe of the animal comes out, but rather it's a case where you cut the limbs and you pile them up. And the chiddush of the Mishnah is that that is still considered to be problematic because of Rav Huna's din of the mefreya kadosh. So then why not say that that is the chiddush in rubo? That's a big chiddush. So why not say that that's what's being said to us by the Mishnah? So Rashi makes a comment here. Shinuya ba'alma shani agav duchake. Rav Huna was painted into a corner, and we answered on behalf of Rav Huna because he was painted into a corner. But matznita be'mashmutei kaima. But the Mishnah itself, the simple reading of the Mishnah, is robe means robe. So what Rashi says is that which we answered Rav Huna before was not the best answer. It was an answer out of necessity. And you're not going to say the chiddush of the Mishnah is that answer that you gave out of necessity to protect Rav Huna's position. Because the simpler reading of the Mishnah is that robe means robe, and it means the entire animal came out birubo. And therefore we would reject the possibility that the chiddush of the Mishnah is coming from Rav Huna. Rather, we're using the simple reading of the Mishnah and say, rub means rubo mamash, and therefore what's the chiddush in rubo mamash? And that's what the Gemara was trying to discover, whether it's when the case was 50-50 left, and there's a minority of an eiver left in, do we pull it out? Or is it a case where the robe of the animal left, but a minority of a limb contributes towards that, and the robe of the eiver is still in, which one wins the tug of war there? And the answer of the Mishnah is that the tug of war is won by the robe of the fetus, not the robe of the eiver. So Rashi formulates it that way. There are those that, like the Rosh, that want to suggest that that proves that the halacha is not like Rav Huna. Rashi just says that from a linguistic standpoint, it makes more sense to explain the Mishnah this way than the difficult way to explain it according to Rav Huna. But others say that that's proof that the Gemara doesn't accept Rav Huna's explanation of the Mishnah, because otherwise that would have been the Chiddush. And the fact that it doesn't use that shows you that they don't believe the halacha is like Rav Huna, but rather that the halacha is like Rabba. So now the Gemara says, Bai Rabba. Rabba is now going to ask a series of questions over here. Some of them are a little strange, but we'll see why he's asking these questions. Karcho b'siv, mahu. When the animal is being born, if you wrap it up in bark or some sort of covering, what is the din? Bitalito, he wraps it up in his cloak, mahu. What's the din? Bishilyato, you wrap it up in the placenta, what's the din? Rashi says that the nature of the question over here is, you have to be peter rechem. Peter rechem means that you're the first to exit through the birthing canal. What happens if you surround the fetus that's exiting, and therefore, yes, it's coming through the birth canal, but it's not touching the birth canal, because you've now covered the animal in such a manner. Now Rashi says it's an imtim salomar, which is, karchob siv and talito are foreign objects. Rashi says, imtim salomar, Siv havichatzitza. If you say the talit and the siv are actually chatzitzot, demin shalobimino, because that's a foreign element that's in there. Then the next question is shilya. The placenta, which does belong in there, maybe that shouldn't be a chatzitza because it's minor. Maybe it is a chatzitza between the animal and the birthing canal. So that's how Rashi reads it as a progressive question, which is kachol b'sivin talito is one question. The Gemara says, if you decide about that, that it is a chatzitza, then what's the din b'shilyato? B'shilyato or chayu? If it's the placenta, what's the question? Animals are born with their placenta coming out with them. That's not something like a foreign element. It's not even a question. That's part of the birthing process. That shouldn't be a chatzitza. Ela b'shilya acheret mahu. It's not its own placenta, but it's a placenta of another animal. Whether that means that a foreign animal, they entered the placenta in, or they're twins in there, and the placenta of one of them released and was around the other one when it exited, that's what's a foreign placenta. So then the next case is karachto ba'achazto ba'otziato. So Rashi claims that the case here is where isha biyadeha, a woman with her hands, put in the hands in order to facilitate the birthing, so her hands now are between the animal and the birthing canal. Mau, what is the din over here? Because, as Rashi says over here, kevin de orchehu, that's a normal process, leleid et abhemta, because you give birth or help the animal birth. So just like a midwife does this for a woman when she's helping the birthing process, she puts her hands in there. Her hands, yes, are a foreign element, but it is the normal process of birthing. And since that's the normal process of birthing, maybe by the name as well, the normal process of birthing is when you stick your hands in there and you pull the animal out. So even though your hands are sitting between the animal and the birthing canal, nevertheless, that's not considered to be a chatzitza because it's considered to be normal. So that's the question according to Rashi. And then Rashi says, Hechidomi, the question of Hechidomi is in all of these cases. Everything that we mentioned before, what is the scenario? Idan apach devirach reshe, if it came out with its head first, patarte, it was poter the rechem. I mean, as soon as the head exits, then already you have peter rechem, and you don't need robe of the animal. And where was the period in time where you got your hands in there, you got the bark in there, then you prevented it from touching the peter rechem? Ella, denofik derech margalotav. Case here, the scenario here is a case where it's coming out feet first. So therefore, the governing principle is robe, and not the birth of the head. If the head comes out, it's automatically classified as a birth, as we've seen before. If it comes out with its hind legs, it comes out in breech, then in that scenario, the robe of the animal has to exit in order for it to be classified as a birth. So in a case where you need robe, then these scenarios become much more relevant because as the animal's exiting, you have time to get yourself in there to become a chatzitza between the animal and the birthing canal, and that's why these questions exist. On the other hand, if it's coming out head first, by the time you figure get your hands in there or get anything in there, the head's already out. It's already considered to be a birth. So that's why it has to be derech margalotav. And that's what Rashi pointed out earlier, that the animal is not subject to a problem of matil mul b'kodoshim until it is born. Dushat ha-bechor devolves when it's born. So if it comes out head first, you don't really have any time to do anything because the head came out, it's already born. But if it comes out derech margalotav, it comes out feet first, then you have time that you can then cut it up and throw it away, or you can put a mum in the animal before it exits to the point where it is kadosh. And that is because it only becomes kadosh once the robe has exited. Similar to the way that you can make a mum when it's in utero, because it's not kadosh. If you make a mum in it, that's not problematic. That's not called matil mum b'kodoshim. That is Rashi's explanation of the Gemara over here. The Rabbeinu Tam is very bothered by Rashi's explanation, because over here it says that a woman is doing this process. And he says, as far as we know, throughout Shas, the people birthing the animals were the ro'eh, were the shepherds, not women or midwives, were not helping the animals give birth. Midwife or woman is used to birth another woman. She's not used to birth an animal. And therefore, he should have used the male formulation rather than a female formulation. And that's why he's bothered by the fact that Rashi explains it this way. Rashi seems to be explaining it that just like a midwife births a woman, so too we would apply the same question to an animal when someone is birthing the animal, even though Rashi even seems to indicate the woman is birthing the animal. But Rabbeinu Tam is bothered by that problem, and therefore he favors heavily the girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananu. It says, V'nir Rabbeinu Tam kamo girsa Rabbeinu Chananu, karachto achoto vehotziato, shiodane keivaimo. It is not karachto ve'achazto, like we have in our Gemara, which is that you wrap your hands, grabbed it to pull it out in order to have it give birth. Rather, it's a case where there are twins in there. There's a male and a female. In Karachto Achoto, the head of the Zachar is coming out between the legs of his sister. So now the question is his sister's legs that are wrapped around his head, are they a chatzitza to the point where he's coming out without being poter rechem? Then the Gemara's question is, when the Gemara says, hey, chidami, it's about this particular case. What is the scenario where it's caught between its sister's legs? If it's caught between its sister's legs, that means that its sister's head came out first. If the sister's head came out first, there's no longer any poter rechem for the zachar. That's what the Gemara answers. It's a case where the sister's legs are exiting first, and the zachar's head is between the legs of the sister. So now, as it's exiting, the sister hasn't reached the point of rove by the time that the zachar's head exits. And that's why we have a question about Kedushat Bechor over here. And the question again is about the legs of the achoto surrounding the head of the zachar, whether that's classified as a chatzitza or is not classified as a chatzitza in this case. Then the Gemara continues with the questions, which become much more esoteric and almost impossible. Balato chulda, that a weasel swallowed it up. Beotziato, and actually took it out. Mao, what's the din over there? This is a possible scenario, although it's not exactly the most common scenario. But what does happen is that a cow, when it's giving birth, is actually frozen in place. It can't move, it can't protect itself. In addition, cows do not work together as a herd. So even if it calls out, none of the other cows will come to protect it. As opposed to other animals where, as a herd, they will come to protect each other, the cow is then frozen in place, stuck. So what the predators do, like the jackals, is that they wait for the mother to be giving birth. And as the mother is giving birth, they come, and then they eat the exiting agal calf that's coming out, because the mother can't protect itself, it can't move, and again, it doesn't call for help. Even when it calls, nobody comes to help it, and then they prey on these cows that are then stuck and can't move. This is a similar scenario where you have this chulda, this weasel, or whatever the animal is that is coming to eat the fetus. It comes along and sticks its head into the womb of the mother and swallows the eagle as it's exiting. So now, is that considered to be a chatzitza? Mar says, hotziato haaf kiktei. What do you mean it took it out? It came out already. Ela balato behotziato. It swallowed it and took it out. Vehichnisato. Then it put it back in. Vehichiato. And spit it back out. Viatzameela. And then it exited on its own. So the animal went in, swallowed whatever was in there, and pulled it out, so it never exited the womb. It never exited through the kotei beit rechem. And now it goes back in, inserts its head back in, and spits it back out, and then the animal is born by itself. Mao, what's the din over here? Is it considered when you re-enter into the animal, as if now the animal is being born for the first time, and it is poter rechem? Or do we say that since it took it out already, then when you put it back in, it has no bearing? Now, there are those that want to suggest that it's no question that the one that he took out already is not the Bechor, because it already exited. When you put it back in, you can't make it into the Bechor at that point. The only question is the next one that exits considered to be a Peter Rechem or not? Do we classify this animal that was taken out without going through the Pele Peter Rechem because it was swallowed as not being Peter Rechem? But then when it's put back in and now exits through the Pele Peter Rechem, is that considered to be Peter Rechem and therefore anything that comes afterwards would not be a Bechor? Or putting it back in has no bearing, and therefore the next one that's poter the rechem would actually be the Bechor. What's the din in that case? Hidbik shnei rachamim. If you put two wombs together, two animals up against each other, yetzami zeven ichnas lezeh. It goes out of one into the other. Mao, what is the din over here? The day patar, that it can be poter rechem for its own mother, but the lab day lo patar, but it cannot be poter rechem, the first one to exit from a foreign carrier, a foreign mother. Oh, Dilma Delabdi Day, Nami Patari, maybe even another animal's rechem, it can be poter. But Mara leaves this as a teku. If you look over here, it says, Ayin Tosafot Sanhedrin, it says to look in Tosafot and other places in Shas. Tosafot and other places in Shas notes that these cases are impossible cases. These are cases that just will not happen. So the Gemara is bringing them here, not because they are, in reality, cases that could happen, but rather the Gemara is bringing it here either drosh v'kabel skar, that you should just learn, but more importantly, it's trying to test the limits of the din over here. And it brings scenarios that even though they are not plausible, the scenarios help to highlight a particular point or a particular issue. And given that, we have then a better understanding of what exactly the issue of Peter Rechem is. And as you correctly pointed out over here, today it actually became relevant. Even though in those days it was not a relevant question, today with surrogate mothers, you actually have the question that is being raised by the Gemara. Can you be Poter Rechem of a foreign animal, and will that be considered a Bechor? And so even though, again, the case wasn't plausible, but now that the Gemara addressed it, it's addressing a real-life case today, which is surrogate mothers. It, as a surrogate, then when the birth happens, is that considered to be Peter Rechem or not Peter Rechem? That's exactly the question we asked in the Gemara. Can you be a foreign fetus that becomes the Peter Rechem for that foreign mother or that carrying mother? Interestingly enough, it actually became relevant, even though in the time of the Gemara, it was an impossible case, as the Baal Yad Tosafot point out. So now, by Rav Acha. Rav Acha asked the following question. Niftechu kolei Peter Rechem mahu. What happens if the birthing canal open up so wide that the animal exits without touching the kotei beit rechem? Avir rechem makdish. It is at the air space that's in between the kotei beit rechem that gives it its kedusha, vayika, and that you do have there. Odilma negiat rechem ikadsha. You actually have to touch the birthing canal in order for it to be kadosh. Valeka, and here you didn't do that because it opened so wide that it was born without touching that birthing canal. Bayimar Barvashi. Ne'ekru kodei beterechem mahu. If the kodei beterechem, and the word ne'ekar here means, were undermined, were taken out, then what's the din over here? Mar says, ne'ekru letnehu. If they were taken out, if they're missing, they're not there. So then what's the question anymore? Ela ne'ekru betalile bitzavere. It was exiting, or the animal was being born. The kodei beit rechem got wrapped around the neck of the animal, and the animal comes out with the kodei beit rechem around its neck. So it doesn't exit through the beit rechem. It comes out. It rips or tears it out of its mother on its way out. My bimkoman mikadshe. When they're in place, they have the ability to mikadesh, to sanctify the animal. Shalom bimkoman lo mikadshe. On the other hand, if they are not in place, then they cannot be mikadesh animal. Or maybe it makes no difference. Even when they're out of place, he went through the kotei beit rechem, came out through the beit rechem, and therefore he will be kadosh, even though he didn't really exit through it necessarily, but he came with it as it was exiting. Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the following question of Rabbi Zera. Nigmimu kotei beit rechem mahu. Now, nigmimu, Rashi brings two interpretations over here, and you can see in the Oruch, he brings Perush, Nit Aklu Siftei Beit Rechem, that the walls of the Beit Rechem were worn down or disappeared. And Rashi says that in his second explanation, where he brings a Pasilishna Achrina, Nigmemu Mibifnim, Misafach Hitzuna Mishumeret. It's a case where the internal walls have ripped away or don't exist, but the external wall or the exit really still exists over there. So then the question is, when does it become kadosh? When it exits, it becomes kadosh, and therefore since the exit is still there, it is kadosh. Or is it the passage through the Beit HaRechem that makes it kadosh, and there's no passage anymore because there's only just the exit that exists right now? The question is, where's the threshold of kedushah? Because only when it exits does it become kadosh. So maybe the exit is so important that just that the exit exists, that's enough. Or is it the entire process of exiting that creates the kedushah? That would be the question according to the Oruch and Rashi's second Lashon. Rashi brings the first Lashon, which is Nigmimu, which we saw earlier in the Masechta with regards to grinding down something. Wearing down the teeth is Nigmimu. So the same thing over here. Nigmimu would mean that the birthing canal is still there, but the inner lining or the inner part of it was scraped out. So that it exists, but it doesn't exist in its entirety. You've scraped out the inside of it. That's the first way that Rashi brings the question. Number one, Kanagat Bibayi the Bayulon. You're actually touching on a question that we already questioned or we already addressed, which is the Bai Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera himself asked the following question, Ramila Bai Minei Rabbi Zera Mi Rabbi Asi, or some bring the attribution this way, which is Rabbi Zera asked the question of Rabbi Asi, Omeid Mirubeh Ala Parutz. If there's still more that is standing versus that which is not standing, Ve'yatzad Derech Parutz. And then went out through the area that had the less standing. Parutz. Mirubal Omeid, or a case where you have the lack of what's there is greater than what is there. It's a derech omeid. but it went out through the area that has the omeid. So now omeid and parutz are whether the item exists or doesn't exist. So omeid means that the birthing canal or the beit harechem exists, and parutza means it doesn't exist. It's torn away or missing in that location. So generally when you have omeid merubeh ala parutz, when you have more standing than that is missing, we go batar rov, and we assume it's as if the canal or the beit harechem is there. And vice versa, when the parutz is greater than the omeid, we would assume that the greater one prevails, and therefore it's as if there's no beit harechem and no canal. But in each of these two cases, the animal went out in the minority side of it, which is that in the case where the omeid was greater, the animal exited in the place where there was no beit harechem there. And vice versa, in the case where the parutz was more than the omeid, it went out of the area where there still was the beit harechem, was still there. My, what's the din in that case? So now that was the way the question was posed. Now he refers back to Rabbi Yirmiyah's question that he posed to Rabbi Zeira. He says, Ad kan lo yibayli. When we presented the question, we only asked the question, Ela parutz mirubel omeid. When the parutz was greater than the omeid. Deiko mei bolam, that there was still some of it. There was some semblance of the beit harechem that was there. About nigmimu, in the case where there's nothing left, according to the second view in Rashi and the Oruch's view, which is that the entirety of the inner beit harechem is gone. It's just the mouth or the exit that's still there. According to the first view in Rashi, the entire inner lining is gone. The only thing that's left is the external lining. Nigmimu lo kami bayile, or no kami bayile. We didn't ask that question. Meaning that your question is obvious that there is no birth over here. You have to have a yitziat beit harechem, you have to have a pet harechem, and if there is nothing there except for the exit, then you haven't had a pet harechem. We, in our formulation of the question, made it clear that there has to be something there. And our question revolved around how much of a something do you need? Do you need the majority to be omeid, even if it goes out of the area where it doesn't exist? Or if you have majority parutz, but it goes out of the area where there wasn't omeid, what's the din in that case? But in both cases, we're focused on the fact that there is omeid, that there is something there. In your scenario that you're asking about, there's nothing there. If there's nothing there, there's no question that it is not poter the rechem. All right, next Mishnah. Behema shemeit ubra betoch meeha. If you have a fetus that dies in utero, boshita roet yodo, and then the shepherd sticks his hand in, maybe to check how the baby's doing or how the fetus is doing, venagabo, and he touched it. Ben bebeimat me'a, ben bebeimat Torah, tohor. Doesn't matter whether it's a kosher animal or a non-kosher animal, there is no tumah. Now this would seem obvious because, in general, we say tumah blu'a. Tumah that is already subsumed inside of an animal, it's not exposed to the outside, does not have a din of tumah. The problem is that we're going to face a sheet of Rabbi Akiva upcoming, which says that tumah blu'a of an ubar b'meisha does have tumah. And so now the Mishnah here is coming to say that, and we'll see this in the beginning of the Gemara, Rashi will note this, even according to Rabbi Akiva, this would still be Torah. Even though by a fetus of a human being, he says that if you touch it in utero, it makes you tamei. Over here, that's not the case. Rabbi Yossi, Agalili Omer, b'tmeya tamei, b'torah tahor. We distinguish between a kosher animal, where the fetus inside is not tamei, versus the case of a non-kosher animal, where the fetus inside is tamei. When you touch it, you will become tamei. Now the Gemara says, my taimo the Tanakama. What's the reasoning of the Tanakama? And again, as we said before, it's very straightforward what the reasoning of the Tanakama is. It's tuma blua. But as Rashi says over here, Rav Chista kavachomer. It's unusual over here because you have a kavachomer. Maim ho ila imo la tiro vachila, lo tuilo de tahare midei nevela. If the mother is successful at making a kashir to eat, then certainly she should be successful at eliminating the tumah from this fetus. If you shech the mother, and there is a dead fetus inside, that dead fetus is kosher to eat because it's considered to be a part and parcel of the mother. And the shechita of the mother is matir, that dead fetus that is found inside. So the shechting of the mother is strong enough, or the power of the mother is strong enough to make it that you can eat the animal, then certainly it should be strong enough that the mother's encompassing of the fetus will not allow it to have tumah, and it should be protected from tumah. If it was alive, it would be a ben pakua, and it would also be nitar yidei the shechita of the mother. But even if it's dead, it's also nitar yidei the shechita of the mother, and therefore if it's successful, the shechita, or the mother is successful, being able to mitar yidei achila, then it's also successful at protecting it from being a nevela, or having a din of tumah. And that's what the Gemara is saying here. Even according to Rabbi Akiva, who says the fetus in utero is mitamei, this is an unusual case because of the Kal Vachomer. The Kal Vachomer tells you that in this instance, the din will be different. Now Gemara says, Ashkechan be'ema Torah. That works well for kosher animals. Because by kosher animals, you have this Kal Vachomer. It's you shef the mother, then you're matir the fetus that's inside for achila. That's not true, but right. That's not true by a non-kosher animal. You shecht the animal; it doesn't make any difference. The animal's in the vela, whether you shecht or you don't shecht it, because there's no eating of the animal. So there's no kal vachomer by a non-kosher animal. That's what Gemara says. Beim atmeya minolan. So then, where's the Tanakhama's source for this by beim atmeya? Amar kra. The pasuk says, "V'chi yamut min habeima asher hi lechem le'ochla." If those the animals that you are permitted to eat dies, hanugea b'nivlata. If you touch the nevela, yitma dar, if there is tuma. The Gemara darshins, v'chi yamut min ha-be'ima, zo be'ima tmeya. V'chi yamut min ha-be'ima, just taking that phrase, that's a reference to a be'ima tmeya. Asher hi lachem le'okhla, that modifying phrase is zo be'ima tehora. So the pasuk, if you read it the simple way, is v'chi yamut min ha-be'ima, which be'ima? Asher hi lachem le'okhla. It's modifying the be'ima. Gemara reads it as two separate phrases. Chiyamut min ha-behema, that's behema tzmeya. Ashehi alachem le'ochla is the second behema. Itkish behema tzmeya, the behema Torah. They are now found in the same pasuk. There's a hekesh between them. Ma behema Torah, ubra tohor. Just like by behema tehora, the ubar inside is classified as being tohor from the kal v'chomer that we did before of Rav Chisda. A behema tzmeya, ubra tohor. So too the behema tzmeya, even though it doesn't have the kal v'chomer, the ubar that's kept inside is still considered to be tahor. So that comes from a hekesh. So here's the reasoning of the Tanakhama. The reasoning of why a fetus that is dead inside of the mother is considered to be Torah is because of the kal vachomer of Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda's kal vachomer is if the mother is successful making a kosher to eat, certainly she should be successful protecting against the tumah. So there we have a given piece of information. Once we have that information, we have a hekesh between behemat tmeya and behemat Torah. To teach you whatever is true of the Behemat Torah is also true of the Behemat Tmeya. And that means that if it's in utero, it's Tahor. Just like that's true by the Behemat Torah, so too by the Behemat Tmeya, that will also be true. Now, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, my taima. What is the reasoning for Rabbi Yossi Aglili's position? So, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, this will be the first attempt at this, which we will later reject. Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, B'chol Olech Al Kapav, anything that walks on its hands. Now, kapaf over here is like a reference to paws. So these are animals that walk on their paws. They don't have split hooves. They have finger-like paws. Bechol ha-chaya ha-olechet al-arba. And any animal that walks on four, tmeim eim lachem, they are tmei. Bechol ha-nogeh b'nivlatam itmad arif. Anybody that touches their nevela will become tmei tumat nevela. So the way that Rav Yitzchak is going to read the pasuk is, Kol Olech Al Kapav, it walks on its paws, B'chol Chaya, not amongst the Chayot, but literally in the Chaya that walks on four. So he's saying this is a reference to a fetus of a non-kosher animal that is inside of a non-kosher animal. And that's how he reads it. Michalche Kapayim B'chaya Tameiti Lecha. Those that walk on their paws that are inside of a Chaya Tameya, that I made Tamei for you. So that's his way to upend the Kal Vachomer of Chisden to say the Hekesh doesn't exist. There's no Hekesh between Behemat Tmeya and Behemat Torah because there's a specific pasuk that tells you a din by Chaya and the din will be true by Behemah as well. And that Chaya and Behemah, we're going to see in the Gemara later on, are interchangeable. And therefore, we have a din by Chaya, it's true by Behemah as well. And that says that any non-kosher animal that walks on its paws that's found inside of a Chaya that walks on its fours, meaning that it doesn't have split hooves, doesn't have eight, it has four, that's going to be Tameya. Elemiato, according to your logic, Kalut, Bimei, Para, Litame. If you have something that does not have split hooves, that's inside of a kosher animal, Litame, then it should be Tamei. The Mechalke Kapayim Bechayahu, because it's a case of something that is walking on its Kapayim, because it doesn't have split hooves, Bechayah, inside of something that is a Chayah. Because you just told me that if you have something with non-kosher features inside of an animal, that it is tamei. He says, the mechalke kapayim, the mechalke arba. It's a machalkei kapayim that's inside of a chaya, and the definition of that chaya is machalkei arba, because it says olechet arba. So it's not only got to be that the fetus inside has only kapayim or non-kosher features, but even the holding mother also has to have non-kosher features. Bahai mechalkei arba, mechalkei shmonahu. That case that you brought me is a case where we have, yeah, a four-legged animal, but it's inside of an eight-legged animal. The para is a split-hoofed animal, so it has eight, whereas the kalut that's inside of it only has four because it has closed hooves. And even though the Gemara here could have answered that the Kal v'chomer of Chista would help, like it will later on, nevertheless, it had a better answer over here. So para bimei gamal, lo titamei. So according to you, that maybe a kosher animal that is featured inside of a gamal, meaning that you have a gamal that gives birth to a para, or para-looking thing, that has split hooves in it, lo titamei, then you should be tamei. Demehalchei shmona behalchei arbo. Then you have an eight-legged animal inside of a four-legged animal. So daddy says, that's not a problem. It says, holeich, b'chol holeich, l'rabot para b'mei gama'al. Kol, in the beginning of the pasuk, is a riboy. So anything that has kapayim, then that is merabeh, a para inside of a gama'al. So then, according to you, kalut b'mei kluta, if you have a four-legged animal inside of a four-legged animal, li tamei, they should be tamei, because it's the mehalchei arba, mehalchei arbahu. It's the case of a four-legged animal inside of a four-legged animal. Because over here, the mother is a kosher animal. It was a mother born to a para. A kosher cow gave birth to another kosher cow. It didn't have to be. This kosher cow didn't have split hooves, but it was born inside of a kosher animal. It's clearly a kosher animal. Then that non-split hoofed para has a baby, and that baby now also has the same features, which is it's not a split hoofed animal. So now you have a situation in which you have something that is four-legged inside of something that is four-legged. And according to you, Rabbi Yitzchak, that means that it should be tamei on the inside. So the Gemara says, Lahachi ahani kavachomer de Rav Chista. That's why Rav Chista's kavachomer helps out. Rav Chista's kavachomer tells you that if the shechita of the mother would be matir, the fetus, b'achila, certainly should take care of it mitzad tuma. And over here, if you shech the mother, the fetus inside is going to be kasher. The mother is kasher, and so is the fetus inside. And that Kal v'chomer of Chista will be successful at telling you that it should not be tamei in this case. And even though, as Tosafot points out, the truth is that a kolut bimei kluta, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, is tamei. Nevertheless, Rabbi Tosafot says, Yesh lamar, de nechle le yashev milto de Rabbi Yossi Acha, afil leman de shari kolut. He wants to uphold the position here of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, even according to the one who says a kolut that comes out of a kluta is mutar, not like the shita of Rabbi Shimon that Rabbi Yossi would subscribe to. Inami, achiari, barosh rubo, domim leimo. Or it's a scenario where even Rabbi Shimon would agree that it is mutar because the majority of the animal looks like the mother, and therefore it's mutar. It's only this one feature that doesn't look like the mother, or where it's in utero. And in that case, even Rabbi Shimon agrees that it's mutar, and therefore the Gemara is answering based on those two possibilities. So what we're doing is he's giving us a principle from the pasuk which says that an animal found inside of another animal that's not kosher, that's problematic in terms of tumat and vela. Mar says, well, I can come up with scenarios where you're having certain animals that either will be tamei or tahor based on the qualification that you gave, which is you need a four-legged animal inside of a four-legged animal. So then we would think to exclude eight-legged animals inside of four-legged animals. Or we would think to include four-legged animals that are inside four-legged animals, but they're kosher. So in each of these cases, we have a way to say that either is ribuy in the pasuk to include it, or there's a kal v'chomer of Rav Chista to exclude that case. Then the Gemara says, matkif lo Rav Chodvai barami. Now we have another question on this position of Yitzchak. Chazir bimei chazir ta. What are you going to do with a piglet inside of a pig? Lo di tamei. Shouldn't have a din of tumat nebeila when it dies. The mechal cheshmone, behal cheshmone hu. Now you have an eight-legged animal inside of an eight-legged animal, and it is an eight-legged animal because pigs have split hooves, even though they don't chew their cud. They're not kosher animals because they don't chew their cud, but they do have split hooves. So now you have an eight-legged animal inside of an eight-legged animal. According to you, only four-legged animals inside of four-legged animals are problematic in terms of tumat nevela. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi Galili, it should be that pigs that are in utero, that die, should not be mitamei tumat nevela. Yeah, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yosef Galili makes no distinction. He says, any non-kosher animal that has a dead fetus inside, if you touch that dead fetus, even when it's inside, you're tamei tumat nevela. He doesn't say pigs are the exception to the rule. Ella, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Now in general, the word Ella usually comes to undermine that which has happened before. So here, Ella Amar Rav Yonachan Bar Yitzchak would seem to be a wholesale rejection of that which Rav Yitzchak said before. In this case, that's not true. That even though we're going to use Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's pasuk as the source, nevertheless, Rav Yitzchak's pasuk is still going to be important to indicate to us a direction to take. And that is, it's telling us that there exists this exception of Behemat Me'ah, even though it can't cover all the scenarios, nevertheless, it does give us a semblance of what is going to happen here, and it helps to enhance that which Rav Nachman Yitzchak is going to say. So again, here, the Ella is not a complete rejection. It's a rejection as that being the primary source, but it still will act as a secondary source. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, we learn it out, Me'ahcha. We learn it out from the Korban Oleh V'Yoreid. In the case of the Korban Oleh V'Yoreid, where you have Tumat Mikdash V'Kodoshav, the scenarios that are laid out in the Parshat Vayikra with regards to the Korban Oleh V'Yoreid, O Nefesh, Asher Tigah B'Chol Tavar Tameh, a person that touches anything that's Tameh, O B'Nivlat Chayat Me'ah, or a carcass of a Chayat Me'ah, a non-kosher wild animal, O B'Nivlat Behemat Me'ah, or a non-kosher domesticated animal, O B'Nivlat Sheretz Tameh, or he touches some of the Shratzim, which have a din of Tumah, V'Ne'alami Menu, he forgot about it, the fact that he's Tameh, V'Hu Tameh V'Ashem, and then he does something wrong, we will find out in a second what it is that he did wrong. We already know, because it's called Tumat Kodesh V'Kodoshav, that the problem is that he ate Kodesh while he was Tameh Tumat Aguf, or he entered into the Mikdash when he was Tameh Tumat Aguf, and he forgot about it. But here in that Pasuk, you have extraneous information, which is, V'chini V'lat Be'imat Me'ah Mitama, U'Bitohura Lo Mitama. Very strange Pasuk. It says over here that if you touch an Nevela of a non-kosher animal, then you're Tameh. Implicit in there is, if you touch a kosher animal's carcass, then you wouldn't be Tameh. Now, a kosher animal that's shechted doesn't have Tumat Nevela. But a kosher animal that dies a natural death does have Tumat Nevela. So why is it only a non-kosher animal's Nevela that's mitama, but not the kosher animal's Nevela? Ela Ezuzeh, what is the scenario here where there is a distinction between kosher animals and non-kosher animals? Zeh Ubar Shebitmeya Tameh. A fetus that's found inside of a non-kosher animal, meaning nevela, that's found inside of a non-kosher animal, tameh, ubitohura, tahor, but it's found inside of a kosher animal, then it is tahor. So yes, there is a scenario where the nevela of a non-kosher animal will be tameh, and the nevela of a kosher animal will not be tameh. That scenario is when it's in utero. Omeachar, the nafkale, the Rav Nachman Yitzchak, the Rabbi Yitzchak lomali. Now that we have Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak as the source, what do you need Rabbi Yitzchak for? So this is not a typical question of the Gemara, because in general when we say Ella means Rabbi Yitzchak, you're out. Rav Nachman Yitzchak is the source now. The fact that the Gemara is asking the question shows you it doesn't believe that Rabbi Yitzchak's pasuk is knocked out completely, but rather it becomes secondary rather than primary. So the Gemara says, Elav de Rabbi Yitzchak, if we didn't have Rabbi Yitzchak's pasuk, Hava mina kule likidarabi huda'ato, that the entirety of that pasuk that is found here in the Korban Oleh V'Yoreid comes from a drosha that we saw back in the Gemara in Shavuot, and it's going to be brought on tomorrow's daf, that Rabbi says that from this pasuk we learn what the problem is over here. There's extraneous language. That extraneous language then allows us to make a gezeira shava to something that is said later on in Parshat Tzav. And over there it's talking about eating kodoshim. So just like over there it's eating kodoshim, so over here it's speaking about eating kodoshim, and that's how we know what the violation is over here. Now, the truth is that you have extraneous information in the pasuk, and you can learn Rabbi's din, and you can learn Rav Nachman Yitzchak's din, and the two of them don't affect each other. I mean, each one of them can use a part of the pasuk and it'd be fine. So Rashi notes is that we have a principle in general, that when you have repetition of information, when it repeats the information, it's not necessarily repeating it to teach you something from each word, it's just repeating it for the extra information that's brought over there. And the extra information over here would have been sufficient with Rabbi's limud to teach us what we need. And therefore, you wouldn't then feel you have any need to darshan the rest of the pasuk, even though all of this is going to be taught in Parshat Shmini, that all of these items are tmeim. The fact that it mentions it over here is to teach you about this din of Rabbi for the Gzeirah Shavah, and nothing more than that. You don't need to learn anything more than that. It would have been sufficient reason to have the pasuk here just for Rabbi's drasha. How do I know I should also make Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's drasha? That's from Tamash Malan from Rabbi Yitzchak. So what Rabbi Yitzchak teaches you is that there is a distinction about an ubar b'meimo. That's what Rabbi Yisrael did. It won't cover all the scenarios, but it tells you that there is a concept that a non-kosher animal found in a non-kosher animal will be tamei. How far does that go? That's learned from the pasuk of Rav Nachman Yitzchak. That means any behemah tameah has that din, not just the particular features that are mentioned in the pasuk of Rav Yitzchak, but all behemoth tameah would have that din, and that's the view of Rav Yossi Aglili. But that comes from the fact that Rav Yitzchak's pasuk gives us an inkling that such a concept exists. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yonatan, Namti lo leben Azai. I was speaking before Rabben Azai. I was talking in Torah to him. Maybe more like I presented before Ben Azai. Lamanu nevelat beima Torah shemitama. We have an explicit pasuk that tells us that a nevela of a beima Torah makes you tameh. Vinevelat beima tmeya shemitama. We also have an explicit pasuk that a nevela from a beima that is not kosher is mitama. Is also mitameyu. Nevelat chaya tmeya shemitama. We also know that the carcass of a non-kosher wild animal is also mitamei nevela. But, nevelat chaya Torah, lo lamadnu. We never have anywhere in the Torah where it tells us that the carcass of a kosher, non-domesticated animal is tmeya tumat nevela. Again, obviously if you shecht it, it won't be that way. But if it's a nevela, it should convey tumah, but there's nothing in the Torah that ever mentions the terminology of a nevela, chaya tehora. The pasuk in Vayikra Hei mentions onefesh shetigav b'chol davar tamei obenivlat chaya tamei obenivlat behemat tamei. So there you have a nivlat chaya tamei and a behemat tamei. And then in the pasuk that we saw in Shmini, it says v'chiyomut min a behemah asher hi lachem leochla asher hi lachem leochla nogem nivlatay mat ha'aret. So there you have a kosher behemah that has a din of nivela, and over here in the pasuk in Vayikra, hey, it has both a chaya and a behemah. The truth is that in Shmini also it mentions the non-kosher animals as well. But what we never have is a kosher chaya that you have a din of nevela. Nevela chaya Torah lo lamadnu. Minayin. Where do we know this from? So Namli, he responded to me and said, kol oleich al kapav b'chol chaya ha'olechet. That's the pasuk that we quoted before, the source of Rabbi Yitzchak, that says that anything that goes al kapav, b'chol achaya, instead of reading b'chol achaya means in a chaya, b'chol achaya means in all chayot, namti lo, I said back to him, b'chi ne'mar b'chol chaya, doesn't say in the pasuk, all chayot, it says alo lo ne'mar, ela b'chol chaya, it says in all chayot. So if you were right, it should have said b'chol chaya. That says it says b'chaya, that comes to really teach you the din that we saw before of Rabbi Yitzchak. Mechalkei kapayim b'chayahu da'ata. That comes to teach you the din of a non-kosher animal inside of a kosher animal, that has a din of nevela. Namli, he said back to me, ma Yishmael omer b'davar zeh. What does Rabbi Yishmael say about this? Namti lo. Again, I responded to him, v'chi yamut min ha'beima. If there is a behema that dies, zoi behema tmeya, asher hi lachem nochla, zu behema tehora. That's the pasuk that we quoted before, that tells you there's a hekesh between behema tehora and behema tmeya. That pasuk that's found in Shmini, we said that the first phrase refers to a non-kosher animal, second phrase refers to a kosher animal. Ledmadnu chaya bichlal behema. We already know that a chaya is subsumed under the term behema. Ubehema bichlal chaya. We also know in reverse, that a behema is subsumed under the term chaya. Both are interchangeable terms. Now the Gemara gives all those permutations. So chaya Torah, bichlal behema Torah. We all know that a kosher chaya is subsumed under a behema Torah. Chaya tmeya, bichlal behema tmeya. We also know that non-kosher chayot are subsumed under behema tmeya. And then vice versa. Behema tmeya, bichlal chaya tmeya. And non-kosher behema is subsumed under the non-kosher chaya. And behema Torah, bichlal chaya Torah. And a kosher behema is subsumed under a chaya Torah. So those are all the four permutations that you could have in this scenario, and all of them are true. Which is the end of the statement from Rabbi Yishmael, which means that all permutations, means that both by kosher and non-kosher animals, behema and chaya are interchangeable terms. And now what the Gemara is going to do is now parse this braita, and take each one of these phrases, show you what the source is, and then tell you what the chiddush is the din that arrives from that. And he says to me, Chaval ben Azai, Shalosh Shimei Shet Rabbi Yishmael. woe is to Ben Azai. I mean, Ben Azai is saying this about himself, that I didn't spend enough time servicing Rabbi Yishmael so that I could learn this Braita from Rabbi Yishmael. Here, Rabbi Yonatan has the Braita that would have solved Ben Azai's problem. Rabbi Yonatan poses him a question. Ben Azai gives an answer that he thinks is the right answer. And Rabbi Yonatan proves him wrong because he says, Rabbi Yitzchak's drasha makes sure that your source is not the right source. And then when Ben Azai asks him, what's your source? He brings a Braita from Rabbi Yishmael. And Rabbi Ben Azai says about himself, woe is me that I didn't service Rabbi Yishmael sufficiently that I don't know this Braita. And then the Gemara now is going to go through each one of the components of the Braita and explain to us where we know it from and what the Chiddush is that's brought by that component. Okay, we're going to stop here. Four lines down on the top of Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph.